thing, I think it takes a lot of moxie to do what you do for a living. How did you become an actress?
Oh, Father Time. Let's go back. Like the Wayne's World. So basically, well, I'm originally from Jacksonville, Florida. So I was born in Gainesville. So woo, go Gators. Sorry, a little shameless plug there. And I'm born in Jacksonville and I'm an only child. So my mom basically was the force behind me getting into everything. I had my first guitar when I was in the first grade. So I was like 6 years old. My mom is retired Air Force military. So over 30 years. So she is like very high ranked. And so I had discipline, but I also had fun. So knowing that I was only child, I'm from a long line, like I have a huge family, but my mom always wanted to make sure that education, but also activities were basically enhancing my life. So, like I said, I was always into music. I was always into just, you know, doing comedy things. Like my mom and I used to watch like high drama. We used to, PBS was my best friend back in the day. I mean, that was when I was like, ooh, I mean, PBS back in the day on a black and white TV, that was like back then, that was good, you know? And I grew up like on Hanna-Barbera, like all the cartoons and, you know, stuff like that. I mean, so those are the things that I grew up with. So after watching a lot of, you know, the dramas, like the Nutcracker every single year, like, you know, that type of, you know, things, I was like, hey, I think I can do that. So when I was in school, well, no, actually before then, it was like, I would say, true story too, I would say around like pre-K or around that time, there was a news station that used to call it Good Morning Jacksonville, or, you know, so like a Good Morning America, but Good Morning Jacksonville. And they would come to like little schools, you know, so it's so cute with the little cute little kids, come to each school. And, you know, they would like, okay, this is Miss So-and-so's, you know, first grade class. Good morning, Jacksonville. You know, that type, you know, to open up the store, the show. So they came to my school, my little pre-K, like, you know, we're doing our little arts and crafts and we all like gathered around. We're like in the really cool. And then I remember I saw the camera on me. And then I was like, okay, I like this. I was front and center. And, you know, we did the whole, this is Mrs. Cloud's, you know, pre-K class. They want to say, good morning, Jacksonville. And then, like, after that, the camera went to, like, other little kids in the room, like, asking them, like, questions, you know, like, oh, what's your name? Like, what's your favorite project? Or blah, blah. When that camera left me and went to somebody else, I got mad. Like, I was like, oh no, you didn't leave me. Like, what is going on? Literally on the news, on that local station, they turned this little girl. Well, they were interviewing me first. And then they were like, what's your name? I'm like, my name is, you know, I'll give you my full name. It's Mary Karshina Wilona Simpson Jefferson. Yes. Exactly. See the wow factor? Exactly. So to me, I was like, look at me. I can say my entire name, you know, to all of Jacksonville and I'm going to be famous. When they turned the camera from me and went to the other girl and asked her her name, I pushed her in front of the camera. Literally. And I was like, and I am this old and my favorite color is red and my favorite fruit is strawberries and blah, blah, blah. Like I was just going on and on. And they were like, okay, well, that's really nice. You know, young lady, can we have to move on to others? I literally was like stalking them because I was like, no, it's about me. It says Karshina's hour. Like they literally had to like, sort. I mean, I didn't throw a fit. I didn't like cry or anything, but I just couldn't reason in my mind why the camera stopped like talking to me. Like, why would you go to anybody else? Like, to me as a little girl, I was like, who else is here? Like, it's just me. So ever since then, I have been like serious about like wanting to be always in front of the camera, always being, you know, the clown in school, blah, blah, blah. And then from there on, I went to a number of private schools, and there was this one particular school called the Country Day School. And, you know, as most schools do, you put on, you know, your school play, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, they give out little trophies, you know, like, oh, look at her. They're so, so cute. And I remember we did the Pied Piper, and I was the Piper, you know, leading the little rats through the town, blah, blah, blah. Well, I remember once the play ended, I got in front. I start getting applause. And then I said, okay, I like this applause. And then I got a trophy for this. I was like, I like getting trophies. So then when the curtain went back down, I opened the curtain, went back out again. And I was like, where's my applause? Like, I want it. I literally was that kid that really understood the value of people love you, people like your performance, and you get a little mini Oscar. So I, to me, that was the start of my acting. Like, and of course, it's cute because, you know, people are like, oh, that's so cute. But they didn't realize how that, I was like, no, I'm going to be like this forever. Like, I am going to be in front of the camera. I like, this is my job. This is my calling. So
did you,
that is,
mm-hmm. I was just going to say, so did you move to Hollywood like the nanosecond you turned 18?
No, I did not. Education, like I said, was like the force that my mom drove me to. Basically, I mean, I wanted to as well. I was always a good kid in school. If I got a B, I was like, oh my God, I got a B. Like, I was the nerdy girl, but I was the funny nerdy girl who was the chameleon who identified with everybody. Like, I wasn't just in this clique. I was in these popular people, the goth kids, you know, I was everywhere. I went directly, I graduated high school. I was like, what, 16, about turned 17, went to FSU, like, go Seminoles, another plug for the other team. So I was directly in their theater program. And then from theater there, I graduated there. And then I was like, all right, I'm going to go to grad school because it looks highly and respectable to have an MFA in your background. So then I went to the University of Florida. Go Gators again. Yeah, there's a rivalry in my family. It's, yeah. So I went there, graduated there. I won't tell you the year I graduated, but I just know that I've graduated. So I have an MFA. And directly from there, I went to New York. We all do what they call a showcase, where they send out, you know, this is our crop of kids, you know, for this year. Look at us from Florida. This is what we can do. So, you know, you do that. There's some agents that call you. There's, you know, the soaps that were up there that were calling you afterwards, or whatever. So once you graduate, you know, if you have an interview or whatever, you can go back up. So that's what happened to me. I went back up. I had my first audition with a company called TheaterWorks USA, and they were an on-Broadway, off-Broadway touring company, and that was my first audition, and I got it. I literally, my first time out in New York, got that, and then while I was there, I also picked up a Mattel contract where I was a Barbie doll.
Now, were you an actual model for a Barbie doll, or were you in a commercial for Barbie?
I was an actual model for a Barbie doll.
So they actually made you a doll.
The doll was made, but because I had similar features to the doll, like I was like almost the exact replica of the doll. And, well, in my opinion, because that's why they hired me. The doll even had a little bit of my information where it was like, oh, the doll is from Florida. Like, she went on to do this and didn't do this, like, which were my stats, basically. Nice, so, nice. Yeah, I feel like
I never knew that, like, the Barbies were, like, modeled after real people.
To a point, like I said, I think they already had the doll in mind, but because I look so much like the doll, they were like, oh my gosh, she's Simone. Like the campaign was called One Modern Circle. And I was Simone because this is the time when they want to, you know, phase Barbie out of the 1950s. Look at me, or I'm a Malibu Barbie or whatever. Right. So now they want to have her like with rocker pink hair. She's wearing skinny jeans and like with a whatever. And so Simone, the black Barbie, obviously, which is always the best friend. Anyway, she was the hairstylist to the band because Barbie was the lead singer of the band. Ken was like the guitarist, like, you know, like, ooh, look at me, my leather jacket and my faded jeans. Like, they literally, I mean, literally, it was like that. You know, I was the hairstylist, but I also was like in the band, you know, type deal. It was basically like Jim and the Holograms come to life, basically. So
at least it was a hole. You know, but comes with, you know, yeah, it comes with a bent spoon and a hypodermic needle and
make me over. Exactly. That was not our theme song. But we were like in Harper's Bazaar. We debuted at FAO Schwartz, you know, which is the huge toy store in New York. So yeah, it was like a big deal. And then so the contract led me back to Florida and Orlando, where we did like this whole like Barbie convention. Like, I mean, these kids were more than Comic-Con, more than E3, more than like Star Trek conventions combined. It was these Barbie people. And I was like, oh my dear God. These people are like, I didn't even know. I thought, okay, Barbie convention. Okay, Barbie convention, like little girls. No, there was like men, women, children from like Cambodia, from like what I mean, like I was like, are you serious? They're like, oh yeah, well I've got the first edition this and I've got this. And
so it's like Star Trek or Comic-Con or something for Barbie.
But it was 10 times that, because it was a Barbie, because you know Barbie's been around before then. So yeah, these kids were insane, but it was good though. So we did like this whole modeling thing for them. And so we were,
did you dress like the doll? Did you dress like the doll that day?
Yes, I did. Wow. I did dress like the doll. I know guys' fantasies of dressing like Barbie, but yes.
Let me ask you this. Did you get to play with the doll, and did anybody tell you to stop playing with yourself?
How now, brown cow?
Nice.
I love playing with myself. It was pretty fun because I am now a collector's edition.
Nice.
That was my first experience in New York. So as a model for Mattel, that was like, I was a Barbie doll. And then I did the on-Broadway and off-Broadway tour, where we toured all of the Eastern Seaboard. Basically, I was in Martha's Vineyard, to Wisconsin, to Buffalo, down to Washington. So like we covered all that. And we did the tour. It was called A Color of Justice. It was to commemorate the 50th anniversary of the Brown versus Board of Education. So it was really special, because once we did the Broadway show of it, the actual members of the Brown family were there. And that was, trust me, it was tears, because I was like, thank you so much for standing up so I can go to school. So, you know, my future kids can go to school. You know what I mean? So thank you very much. So yeah, that was a very, one of the best moments I think in my life at that point, to like really actually thank that family for doing that. Like, I mean, this was a huge civil rights, you know, thing, you know?
Yeah, so. It was a human rights. I mean,
exactly.
You know? So, well, let's talk about how you made the transition from New York to Hollywood then. I mean, how did that come about?
Well, after my money dried up.
As it tends to do.
As it tends to do in New York. Once the tour was over, I had an option to stay in New York, mm-hmm. or to come back home and then maybe whatever. Well, the New York prices were still the same.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm familiar with that.
Yeah. And being a Florida girl, I'm sorry. We are called the Sunshine State for a reason. That was my first time I've ever seen snow, been in snow, touched snow. I mean, literally, my nickname was Kenny from South Park, because that's how I would dress, and you would only see the slit of my eyes. Literally, they called me Kenny because I was so cold. I've never seen 8-foot snow. I've never felt that wet. Oh yeah. And I was in Chicago too. Thank you, my friend. And I was like, I don't think so. This was bitter.
Yeah. And we're windy too.
Oh my God. Were you windy? But I did love the South Side. I did love the barbecue.
The whole soul section. That's that. Oh yeah. Man.
But we can only go there in the daytime because, you know, it was just, we just set the time.
You got to go there in the summertime where all the street musicians are out.
Yeah, not going to happen. It's too hot. Yeah. I heard about the hotness. I just.
Yeah. It is bad. But
it is bad. But yeah, but I basically went from New York and I went back home just to chill out, you know, just rest my feet. You know, got a job. I was working like 2 or 3 jobs, and people were like, oh, but you were this Broadway star and you were a model. I'm like, yeah, kid. that's great, but I still need money coming in. So, you know, I got a job. And then I saved up. And then I was like, well, I made it in New York, you know, because the whole adage of you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere, you know. And so I did. I was like, all right, Mom, I'm going to L.A. She's like, okay. So I drove to New York, or excuse me, I drove to L.A. And the rest is history. So, yeah.
Now, is that true, though? I mean, if you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere. Because, like, I've heard stories about Hollywood. Now, tell me if this is true or not, that, like, mm-hmm. you know, when you get out there, it's like, yeah, you did all this stuff in New York, but this is different. And then sometimes you just get blown off.
It is. Well, from my experience, it is like that. I mean, somebody else could be different, but at least you have the nuts and bolts of that background to at least propel you to be like, oh yeah, well, I did Broadway. And then it's like a conversation opener. You know what I mean? Like, I did theater and I know it's different from, you know, okay, mic check, you know, like, you know, there's a boomstick right over here, so you don't have to talk so loud. Like, I get that. You know what I mean? But at least it opens up doors for you.
Yeah. I've also heard too that, like, it doesn't matter what you've done in other places. When you get to Hollywood, you know, the one thing you've got to learn is how to be a salesman, basically, or a salesperson. It's like, where you're the product.
It's the biggest prostitution ring ever in the world. Yes. I mean, and I say that with a bit of fervor, because you have to package yourself, sell yourself, as well as maintain yourself, you know what I mean? Like, without being anybody else. It's true. I mean, LA is a totally different beast. I mean, if you're not, I look at it like this. Like, you ever seen the movie Clueless, right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Huge Alicia Silverstone, blah, blah, blah. Literally where she was like, well, everywhere you go, it has valet. Those jokes didn't get to me until I actually moved to LA, because everywhere else, valet is just like a luxury. Like, oh no, I'll self-park myself. There's a garage. No, here, everywhere has valet. And you're just like, okay. When she's talking about the snobbery of, well, I live above Olympic versus Linden versus this, you actually see the snobbery of, oh my God, you're below Rodeo Drive. Oh, the tragedy. It's just like, really? It's like, you're in the valley. All my kids on the west side, like the west side is considered like Santa Monica, any of the beach cities, they're just like, so you really have to be on your deathbed for me to cross the 405 to get to you in the valley, and vice versa. It's hard. It is.
Now, I've heard that from a few people, like, you know, where people, like, the nanosecond they become successful, they move to the good half.
Well, I mean, you do want to go on the other side of the train tracks. I mean, you really do. I mean, who doesn't want to be like in Brentwood, Beverly Hills, as expensive as it is? But no, there are parts in the valley where it's really nice. I mean, I live in a place called West Toluca Lake, which is kind of a prominent place. Toluca Lake, we have like the Warner Brothers Studios, Disney Studios, ABC, Universal, NBC. So I'm surrounded by studio execs and people who've made it. You know, I'm surrounded by those people. But we also have Vivid down the street. So, you know. Nice. So, I mean, again, it's like you have Vivid on the left, but you have Disney on the right. I'm being.
And they'll never. Serious. You know, those companies will never team up. No. So, you know.
I kid you not. Vivid literally is like maybe about 10 blocks to my left, and Disney is about 6 blocks to my right. I kid you not. And so people go.
It's just so funny, because Disney is like, I mean, Disney has an issue with dropping F-bombs in their movies.
No, I know.
You know, and then they're right up the street from what, the biggest porn studio in the world.
I know. Disney corporate likes it that way. But, you know, I personally can't say anything ill towards Disney, because I used to work for Disney corporate. So, you know, I want to keep it kosher that way.
Oh, I love Disney because all the childhood memories I have at Disney World and Disneyland and stuff.
I mean, that's just how, you know, Mr. Hirsch likes it that way. And that's how Mr. whoever's in charge of Disney now, you know, they kind of, you know, like they always say, you know, strange bedfellows.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So. Well, how did you start getting, you know, like your first major gig, like in the movies? Things. Yeah.
Well, like I said, my personal experience, it did stem from my New York connections, where I was in this thing in New York where it was like, you know, be in a movie. .com or something like that. And, you know, I was in New York and I signed up for it. Well, then when I moved out to LA, I just happened to look them up and, you know, they have a list of movies where you can be like an extra, you know, be background or be featured. And sometimes they'll offer like a principal part if you think that you've got the chops for, you know, resume, blah, blah. So I moved out here, unbeknownst to me, where things were, like literally, let's say I moved out here on a Tuesday, I literally sent in my, like, be in a movie, like, yeah, I want to sign up for this movie. And they're like, yeah, can you make it out on Thursday? And I was like, yeah, sure. You know, I was living in Buena Park, as if anyone knows the geography of California is in the Orange County in the OC and towards Anaheim. Well, I thought at the time, oh, yeah, I could totally just drive from the OC to LA. Psh, no problem. Maniacal laugh and starts. It took me 2 hours to get from the 5 freeway to LA from Buena Park, and my call time was coming up, and I was like, oh my dear God, this is too much. I can't live out here. Like, you know, because I didn't know where else I was gonna go. I had literally had just landed before I could, you know, find out where I need to really be in, you know, what area is nice. I literally was living like at the Travel Lodge. Like that was my home for the first like week that I was here. But I got into a movie and I was like, okay, you know, I was like, I'm going to be a success story. I'm in the Travel Lodge, but I got into a movie. Watch out, Scorsese, here I come. You know, yeah, that didn't happen. Basically, it was 2 hours to get there. We had to get to the some theater, and the movie was called Aquila and the Bee. Well, that was with Lawrence Fishburne and Kiki Palmer and Angela Bassett. So it was like a huge movie, great movie. So love it. So then when we got there, you know, I finally got to see how Hollywood operated behind the scenes. So there is the part where it's like background people to your left, major stars to your right. The two twain do not meet. Truly. So the production crew was great. The production crew was good, but they really want to say, okay, background kids, when you're called, that's when you come on, you know, to the film. When you're not called, you stay in your little area. You know what I mean? So, I mean, that's how it is. So, you know, we do our little thing, and then they were like, okay, sign this, you know, to get your voucher to get paid. And I was like, oh, I didn't know we were getting paid. I thought it was just going to be like, oh, look at me. I'm just an extra in the, you know, in a movie. Exactly. And they were like, no, you get paid through this service. And I was like, okay, I like this. So then you start talking to people like, you know, who's been these people who've been there forever. And of course, you don't want to let them know, oh, I'm green. I just arrived like 2 days ago. So I was like, yeah, I love, you know, the movies, blah, blah, blah. And then people say, oh, are you union or non-union? I go, I don't understand. What do you mean? And they were like, oh, are you SAG or are you not SAG? And I was like, come again still? I was like, what? You know, I didn't even know. And they were like, oh, okay, so Screen Actors Guild is the main union. And I was like, oh, no. I said, I'm in AEA. I'm in the Actors Equity, you know. And they're like, oh, that's New York, sweetie. This is LA. And I was like, oh, right. So there is a difference, but I know I'm taking too long, but here it goes. So the difference was they were like, no, that's for, you know, stage and theater and stuff like that. They said, when you're out here in LA, you're either in the union or you're not in the union. Like Screen Actors Guild is totally different. So they say you need to, in order for you to get union, you have to have 3 of these vouchers. So you need to have 3 of these union vouchers to become union. You pay the dues and then you get bigger parts. And I go, well, what's the difference? They say, well, non-union, let's say it's like $60 for an 8-hour day. A union contract is like $140 for an 8-hour day. And wow. I was like, oh, so there's a professional difference.
Well, don't you get speaking parts with union and
correct. Okay. Would you do both? I mean, it all depends. So when she told me that, I was trying to like get these like these golden tickets, like these golden vouchers. I was like, ooh, I need these golden vouchers. Then all of a sudden, I'm having lunch, I'm sitting down next to someone, and someone came up to me, this guy on set. This older gentleman on set, and you know, you always like, they tell the women, don't, you know, people are trying to like say, oh, come to the Valley, you know, do an audition for me, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh no, Vivid, oh. he literally came to me upset and he was like, oh, are you Kiki's stand-in? And I go, oh, Kiki Palmer. I said, no, I'm not her stand-in. He goes, well, you look just like her. He goes, I thought you were her stand-in. And I go, oh, no. I said, well, how do you become a stand-in? And he goes, oh, well, you do this, you do that. He goes, do you have a resume? And I go, yeah. See, actors always need to be prepared. I have my resume. I showed him my resume. He goes, oh, you just got here from New York. I said, yeah, blah, blah, blah. He goes, what other things have you done? I said, I haven't done anything. I said, but except for I'm here, you know, my first time on set, blah, blah. He was like, oh, I like your spirit, I like your attitude. And he goes, here's my number. Call my office. He goes, and I go, okay, great. And he goes, how do you say your name? I say, it's Karshina Jefferson. He goes, great, Karshina. He goes, I like you. Call me. He goes, hey, by the way, my name is Sid Gaines. I'm one of the producers of the film. I go, okay, excellent. So I'm thinking, I'm getting hooked up. I'm all like, I'm going to be on the movie, blah, blah, blah. Then the PA next to me on his walkie-talkie was like, got it. We need 10 people to be here for the next 4 days, and we're going to give them the union status. Great, got it. I literally turned to him and I said, hey, sir, I literally just arrived 2 days ago. I'm going to be here for the next 10 days. I would like to be one of your people that you're looking for at the cast, you know, whatever. He's like, great, give me your name, whatever. And then I went from the non-union extra side to the nice, plushy,
nice
union side, having lobster bisque with Lawrence Fishburne and all. Like, ooh, it was all like, ooh.
It's night and day, isn't it?
It was so night and day. But it was cool because the part that I received was as like a reporter, sort of whenever there's a scene where Kiki does this whole, she's like in front of the National Spelling Bee, and they have the National Scripts guy, like the famous one that's there giving her the words. She's doing her gesture, and then the camera pans to us, and we're the reporters, like sort of judging her, writing stuff down, like, does she make it? And the camera pans to me, and I get this nice, like, featured part, and I was all like, ooh, you know, so I was so excited, and I had to be there for the next 4 days. And I just couldn't believe that I had to drive back and forth for 2 hours. But to me, that was worth it. And then after, you know, we had wrapped, you know, I got, now my money was bumped up. I have got these golden ticket vouchers. I didn't know what to do with them. And then the very next day, we, you know, when they do the Academy Awards, you know, they do the announcements early in the morning. They were like, and the president of the Academy Awards, Sid Gaines. I blew my
mind. Oh, my God.
I was going crazy. I was like, you mofo. Are you kidding me?
He didn't even tell you. He didn't even say anything.
No. He was like, he just said, hey, I'm Sid Gaines. You know, yeah, you remind me of Kiki. I think you got a great attitude. Call my office. I was like, oh, dear God. I am calling your office. Like, in other words, I was like, you're legit. You're not like some like old man trying to get like, you know, some girl in the trailer room or, you know, whatever.
Well, not only that, but the cool thing is, he's not the type that's going to brag either.
Right.
Yeah, he's a down to business guy.
Right. He saw something and then he was like, here's my card. Call me. I like, you know, what I see, blah, blah, blah. And that was it. And I just was like, first thing I was like, mom, I met the president of the Academy Awards. She's like, what? Academy Awards? Are you going? And I was like, that's not what I said. Did you win? I'm like, that's not what I said. I met the president. She's like, oh, okay. So I tried to call him to set up a meeting. Schedules weren't, you know, mixing well because obviously the Oscars were going on at the time. So, you know, whatever. And then I moved from the Travelodge to an actual apartment. And guess what happened? I lost his car.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where you can't just, like, start asking people because they're going to be like, yeah, right.
The best moment, one of my best moments in life was the Brown versus Education. The worst moment in my life, losing Sid Gaines's, like, card. I was like, why, Karshina, why?
Yeah, he's not in the phone book, is he?
Hey, Sid, remember I was that other black girl? And he was like, I meet people. And think about it, he meets people every day. You know, so from there on, I learned about, okay, union and non-union. I mean, it's a learning curve. Then I called SAG and I was like, hey, so I've got these vouchers. What do I do with them? And they said, well, have you been a principal in any commercial or a principal in any TV show? And I go, no, but I was a star on Broadway. And they were like, oh, well, that's our sister affiliation. You don't have to do any non-union work. You just pay the fee and you're in. I was like, are you kidding
really?
Me? I didn't have to do all this.
Okay, so the actors' equity is related to SAG then, right?
Well, it's all part of the, since it's a union system. Yeah. So it's like this whole, like if you're with SAG and then AFTRA, once you're in one, you're kind of in the others if you just pay the.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. What if you would come out to Hollywood and you just wanted to do theater? Would Actors Equity cover you there?
No, you're still considered non-union. Everything is non-union out here in LA. So it's either you're in a union or you're not in a union. I mean, they're heavy on the unions out here, which I get, and I'm very proud to be part of both unions. You know, but that's how things work out here. And so I had to find out that quick, and then so I said, okay, so now I don't have to do any more non-union work. I can now be in a union. And so they were like, yeah, just pay the $3,000 fee or whatever. And I was like, I'll get back to you.
Mm-hmm. I will get back to you. It's really worth it though, isn't it? I mean, because of the perks.
Yeah. I paid it like right then and there. You sign up, you know, whatever. And then that's when I found out, okay, now what's your union? That looks favorable when you're trying to get an agent, because agents want to send you on union projects, which obviously pay more, versus your non-union. It's like everyone's non-union. Think about it. That's you, grandma, your chihuahua dog. Exactly. Your chihuahua dog is non-union. But once you become a professional, then you got to pay for it. That's why they stress so much. That's why you have to like check everything, look everything, because that's our global number one rule. You can't do anything, blah, blah, blah.
But they're your advocate though, right? I mean, they can get you more money. They can get you better condition, working Correct. Conditions, all that other stuff.
Correct. They give us the avian water. They give us the smart waters when we need it. No, it's just like, I mean, they give J-Lo her brown M&Ms or whatever. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's all part of union, but the parts are better. So yeah, when you're asking about speaking parts, union favors more speaking parts. Not to say that any non-union person can't have a speaking part, but once they do, it's what they call Taft-Hartley. They turn them into union quick. Like, because you're going to get residuals, you're going to get money, especially if this is like a big film or a big commercial. Once you speak a line, they have to pay you, and they have to pay you the union rate. So they have to make a union. And that's why the competition is so stiff out here, because now that people are union, if there's 60,000 non-union, there's 120,000 union people.
Wow.
Wow. Trying to get one part.
Yeah.
So it's pretty intense out here. So
now do you still find it hard, even though you've established yourself, obviously, to get certain parts or are you at the point now where you like go after the parts you want?
No. I am still a peon, a no name. I mean, yeah, I mean, I can be on IMDb all I want. I can be on LA casting or whatever. And, you know, they can see me. But again, until you actually make that mark, like until my name is Flo from the, whatever she's doing, Flo, like until you recognize me, I am nobody. You know what I mean? Unless I was like, oh, this is the new girl in Star Wars, the biggest franchise on earth, you're not going to recognize me. Yeah. But that's my goal. My goal is to continue as a working actress so people can continue to recognize me, continue to start looking at me and be like, oh yeah, that's the girl on that show. No, she was on that show. No, I saw her on that show. And that's my goal.
So, yeah, you know, it's funny. I recognized you right off the bat when you gave me your picture. I was like, that's the, remember, I even texted you about that. That's the FBI tech girl from Live Free or Die Hard.
Yep, that was me. That was a great set. Thank you very much. Yeah, I mean, that was like my, like, ooh, look at me, you know, I'm the tech analyst. And I was very proud of that moment. And I was on Everybody Hates Chris, which I love that show.
Yeah, you were the lemonade girl.
Yes.
I watched that show religiously.
Tashina Arnold was like the best. And it was funny because her name is Tashina and my name is Karshina. So we both were making a joke about our mamas. I was like, I know.
They got together someday.
But she was really cool. I mean, there's a lot of cool things going on in the acting world. I mean, again, even if you're non-union, even if you are union, being I wouldn't give anything up as far as being my background, you know, life or doing my, you know, going out for auditions for other roles with more speaking parts, because you learn the business through its core, which the core is the behind the scenes. You learn these terms, so you're not as green. So if you really do get an audition in front of Sid Gaines and they say, oh yeah, are you part of a two camera show or are you four camera? You know what the heck you're talking about. Not just like, what? It's not on YouTube? You know, like, you know what I mean? Like, you understand what's going on. So I always encourage people, like, do it. Like, be background. Learn from it. You also get free food from craft services. So it's like...
Yeah, I've heard from a few people, like, the catering's, like, always good, no matter what the production is.
It is so good. But then you also learn the bad, you know? You learn, like, who really has an ego and who really doesn't know their lines and who is really mean to people, and you're like, it kind of saddens you because you're just like, oh, really?
Now, have you been
like that show?
Now, have you been let down by like that? Like, oh, have you, like, God, where you thought, yes, I can't believe I'm working with person X, and then when you meet person X, they're a total jerk?
Let's just say I've encountered that only four times. He and she, who will not be named.
I don't blame you there.
but let's just say there's been two instances where it truly, truly got to the point where I talked back to the star and I gave them a piece of my mind. I said, sweetie, I don't care who you are. I just started watching your show, so obviously I don't know who you are, you know, the whole thing. And I said, obviously your director wanted me, so I'm here. And then after that little spat or that little thing, the director put me right next to the main star and was like, this is now your best friend. I go, oh, hey, girl, what's going on? You know, like, it was one of those things where you have to be like, I'm under the conviction and, like, yes, I don't want to be quote unquote blacklisted, or yes, I don't want to lose any parts, but there's a point where I'm not going to take crap from somebody because they think that they're higher than me, you know, thumb their nose down at me. It's like, yeah, I may not be on the radar just yet or even on anyone's mind, but hey, I got here. Obviously, I'm in the same room as you, so what does that tell you?
Yeah, you were where I was, you know, a few years ago or something, you know.
Exactly. And I just spoke up for myself, but I did it in a respectful way. I wasn't like all like sassafras, all with my hand in the face, but I just did it in a respectful way. Like, hey, I thank you very much for your comment, but obviously I'm here. So, you know what I mean? So it's one of those things where you also just have to have your demeanor, be professional about it, but also like, have that tact, you know, like, hey, thanks for that, but I'm here too, so
Well, I've heard that from a lot of people that say when Hollywood actors become Hollywood stars, it amplifies their true personality. So you've got some people that, mm-hmm, you know, I'm not gonna mention names or anything that turn out to be total a-holes, but then you've got some people that end up being, you know, you find out are really nice.
Oh my God. They're the people that, and those are the nice ones, are the ones that play the bad role. Like, you always see them. They're like, oh, they must be a douche in real life. And they're like, hey, come give me a hug. And you're like, what?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I've heard a lot of that too. I mean, like, yeah, they're usually the ones you never suspect would be like that.
Yeah. And the ones that are the nicey nice, goody goody, not all of them, but the ones that are, they're the meanest, the worst. And you're just like, really? Something went wrong in your life. Like,
I know you can't tell me who the meanest ones you think are, but who do you think are the nicest ones that you've met?
Martin Sheen is one of the nicest Hollywood stars. I worked on the West Wing back in the day, and he literally during lunchtime, he came down and sat on the curb and sat with all the background actors, all the non-union people, and had lunch with us and was like, hey guys, what's going on? Tell me your story. Let me know about you. Like, he was so like, we were like, it's Martin Sheen.
Oh. Yeah, I've heard that about him. Like, he's actually, he'll, you know, he'll hang out with you or he'll talk to you and stuff.
He's,
and like, he's
so, so nice. I mean, like, literally, like, he was... Like, I couldn't even, like, literally. And then you wonder, you're like, well, no wonder Charlie is borderline psychosis because he really is a nice guy, but then, you know, he does bad things, but he really is a generous and nice guy because his dad is like that. I mean, I don't fault Charlie. Charlie's cool. You know, like he's...
Awesome, Charlie's like a nice guy. He's just got that little mischievous kid side in him. Right. You know?
I mean, if I had his money, maybe. I don't know. But no, but I mean, like, seriously, but his dad was like top notch. Who else was? Oh, one of the kids, Gary Sinise. Oh my God. Like, angel in disguise. Like, he truly was awesome.
I've actually met him. Yeah, well, we saw, you know, me and some friends of mine saw the Lieutenant Dan band.
Oh, did you? Oh,
yeah, nice. And we got to meet him, and he took us up because, see, we're like, me and my friends, we're all musicians, and then he took us up and showed us his bass rig.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he was like, yeah, I play carbon basses, and I got.
He's from Chicago.
Yeah,
too, right?
yeah. So, but I mean, yeah, he's like a normal guy, you know. Yeah,
he's so awesome.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So yeah, I just think, and you know what's funny? Like Charlie Sheen, Gary Sinise would never know they were licensed because, especially if you see Apocalypse Now, or of Mice and Men, or you know, or what Jack the Bear? The Jack the Bear, Gary Sinise was a real a-hole in. You know?
Snake Eyes, Green Mile.
Yeah. Exactly. But I mean, yeah. So I mean, yeah, you're right. They just totally play, you know, evil, mean-spirited guys. Like, well, now that Martin Sheen's older, now that he's like Uncle Ben and Spider-Man, you know, now it's like, okay, now you forget, you know, about Apocalypse Now.
you really do. You know. And the other one that I want to mention was Norman Reedus from The Walking Dead. He has my heart, like every woman's heart, but he has my heart. I met him during not on set, but I met him for they were doing like a private showing of like the season. It was, I think it was like during their second or third season that I do here. It was like a Q&A where, you know, you can be there with the actors, you know, hobnob, and, you know, you actually got to watch the first episode of the season before anybody else, yada, yada, yada. And I remember taking a picture with him and like talking to him, and he was just so down to earth. And I was like, hey, Florida boy, I'm a Florida girl. What's up? He was like, what's up, Florida? Because he's from Florida originally. And so I was like, what's up? He's just like, he really was a Southern boy. Like, he was just like, hey, girl, what's up? And I was like, hey, boy, what's up? Like, you know, he's like, how are you enjoying it out here? I'm like, oh, it's great. And of course, you know, you have to do the envy. Like, I put my picture up on Facebook, like, me and Norman Reedus. All my friends are like, shut up. I'm like, yeah, me and Daryl.
Guess who I was with.
We have a thing now.
Nice.
We have a Florida connection. And so, but he's really, like, he doesn't mind taking pictures. He didn't mind, like, being with this crowd. Like, he was really cool. I mean, like, and he's a star that's blowing up from, like, Boondock Saints to, like, all these other things. Like, he's just blowing up. And I'm very proud of him, but he's just so down to earth. And I was just like, wow. Very good. Very nice. Yeah.
Nice.
So, well, I'm hoping to be like that. So
nice. So what can you talk about any projects you have coming up?
I do. I have a project that's a web series launch called The Red Shirt Diaries. If you are a Star Trek fan, please tune in.
Definitely.
It's called Jawinn. If I can plug that, Jawinn. It's producer and director Jason Inman, we did like a Walking Dead spoof. So the Red Shirt Diaries is a Star Trek spoof.
Oh, wow.
About the red shirts, because everyone knows that if you're a red shirt,
yeah,
Star Trek,
you're dead. Yeah. Exactly. You might as well not be Union if they give you that shirt.
Exactly. I mean, exactly. You're that no name, you know, person that, you know, oh, you're a red shirt. You're like, no, I don't want to be a red shirt.
Yeah, Ensign Rodriguez, see what's behind that rock. Regular cast, stand behind me.
Exactly. And you're like, Yeah, no, thank you. But yeah, but basically it's called Red Shirt Diaries. It's a spoof on this ensign called Ensign Williams. That had, like, again, Williams, she's talking about her first days on the ship, you know, who she meets. And of course I'm Lieutenant Uhura, obviously, cause I'm the black one. So it's nice. Funny.
Right. So you're the regular cast though.
Exactly. I don't wear although in the series I have on the original red dress, I am a lieutenant commander. Thank you very much.
Nice.
I don't die. So yes. But yeah, I mean, even Scotty, he wore a red shirt, you know, he's like, yeah, I didn't die. So, but that's the joke. It's like, you have to meet that status to not die. Like you can, but everybody else, sorry.
Yeah. If you're instant anything, you're a goner.
Yeah, so that's going to be actually premiering actually the same time as ADP is premiering.
Nice.
On September 1st.
Awesome, awesome. Projects. Well, you know, it's good that you're bringing up a web series, though, because, I mean, like, if you know, I've noticed the last few years a trend. I mean, Kevin Spacey's doing a web series now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, let me ask you this. Do you think Hollywood is in a paradigm shift now? Because you're seeing Hollywood stars like Glenn Close, Kathy Bates, you know, mm-hmm. The list could just go on, where they're just exiting the theaters and coming right into your living rooms. But now you've got, you know, movie stars like Kevin Spacey, you mm-hmm. know, coming, you know, skipping that and then coming right to your pad.
Exactly. I think because, like, through Amazon has their original series, even YouTube has original series, but Netflix has original series. I think what people are understanding is that there's this audience of people who say, you know, I really don't want to watch this or spend my money or whatever. I would rather spend my money at home with my loved ones in the comfort of my seat and watch this show. And then so far that key has been happening. I mean, House of Cards, I mean, come on. When I saw this, I was like, House of Cards, but then it was great. I was like, oh my God.
That could be on any network. I mean, that's,
exactly,
you know.
Exactly. Derek, have you seen the show Derek with Ricky Gervais? That's an original series for Netflix. And it is like so heart touching and heartwarming, but it's a good series. And you're thinking, why isn't he on like NBC or the major networks or, you know, something that people would love to see this? No, it's they're doing it their way through their production companies. And I feel like that's how it's going now.
And so, Orange is the New Black. That's another one. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, these shows could easily be on NBC, ABC, CBS, easy. HBO, Showtime, whatever.
Easy.
You know, the quality, not just the acting, but I'm talking about, I mean, it looks like they spent money on it.
To be honest, it's true. You should see the budgets for them. The budgets kind of compare. There's close, but then you think, wow, I just used this budget, this $1 million on this show, and now we're Emmy nominated like 16 times versus I spent $1 million on this and no one's like, we're not nominated and we have really good show, really good people. And you're like, yeah, because I'm sorry, people are cutting their cable. Sorry. People are good. They're moving on to what can I download now? I mean, we're still a coffee maker generation. I want my coffee now. I want it instant. I want it now. So, but the flick of the wrist, you can just done without having to subscribe to just HBO or just that. And I know HBO Go is coming out and stuff like that, but it's like Netflix, you can do so much more. You know what I mean?
Well, and then on top of that, they release all the episodes at once. So you can watch them all at your leisure. It's not like you don't have to wait a week.
Yeah, I'm guilty. I binged on like so much stuff. Like, and you can go back to series. Like I love Frasier. Oh, it was one of my favorite series with Kelsey Grammer. And I just binged watch all of the 200 and something episodes. That's like not 10 seasons. And I was just like, how I missed you, Frasier. And it's like, I missed you, you know? So,
well, yeah. And you're seeing, you know, what's funny too, is you're seeing shows that used to be TV shows move over online. Mm-hmm. LeVar Burton. Reading Rainbow.
Oh my God, Reading Rainbow. Yeah. How was
speaking,
that the best
speaking
ever?
Of PBS from when we were kids, I used to watch that show even when I allegedly outgrew it. It was still a guilty pleasure just because I love LeVar Burton so much.
Oh,
I mean,
my gosh, yes. The theme song still gets to me.
Yeah.
Reading Rainbow.
But I mean, I think it's going to come back bigger now because he's coming out online and he's got the, you know, he's got the apps and all that other stuff that are coming. You know, he's turning the show into more of a tool.
Yeah. I mean, he just finished up doing his Kickstarter thing. Like, we'll redo it if you give me like $50,000. And it, like, literally within 3 days, it was like, okay, we're now at 100,000. He's just like, thanks, we're doing it. Look how much people loved it. Yeah.
He ended up with over 5 million.
Oh, jeez, these kids. I love it. No, it's great. It's great.
Well, but do you think that's going to affect, you know, like make it better for the acting community in Hollywood, that things are moving away from, you know, theatrical and TV and you're getting more of an online presence? Because also another thing I read was last season was the first season this had happened on any show, but the Big Bang Theory season premiere for last season, aka a year ago, had five times as many viewers that saw it on demand than saw it when it premiered that Thursday.
Yeah, I don't know. It really is hard to say because it's a slippery slope. Although I love, as a consumer, you know, like, yeah, I would love this and I would love to do this. But as an actress, I'm torn because it's like, well, I want my agents to send me out for this and maybe I'll get discovered on this independent show versus I would on a regular network show. But yet I still don't want them to not send me out on a network show just because I think I get more greater. You know what I mean? So it's hard. As long as it's not as long as it's not reality TV show, like, those shows can die for all I care. Like, yeah.
They're just credibility.
Every state has a housewife now, and I'm like,
oh, yeah. Well, they're just credibility destroyers too.
I mean, how many now? It's Housewives of Orlando. I'm like, there's nothing going on in Orlando. Like, I mean, why? I mean. I like I said, I don't want to speak ill for things, and I get it, but it's just like, how many white women can I see that's like Sex in the City? How many black women can I see that's like Sex in the City? I just don't want to see it anymore.
Yeah, like, you got like the Housewives of Joliet now and all this other crap. They're all talking around the barbecue grill. Yeah, Stan got laid off again.
I mean, right. I mean, I'm surprised they didn't do Housewives of Hawaii. Hello. I would love to be on that set because why? It's freaking Hawaii, for first of all. Second of all, you only got the one road. So, I mean, you can only go in so far.
Yeah, or the Housewives of Kabbalah. That'd be cool. I mean, you know, like my husband still doesn't know what I look like. You know?
That's sad. That's really true.
And they all got one husband. It's all the same husband. So there's.
I know. I mean, seriously. I mean, but seriously, it's like how many? I mean, and then they got the house husbands, and I'm like, okay, so now we're gonna have house children, house pets, house worms, house turtles,
and you never find out what they do for a living.
Well, they all are like in some financial district or business venture. And I'm just like, well, what does that mean? They
mafia. No, I mean, they all have bank card accounts from the Cayman Islands and all that crap.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I do. I mean, isn't everybody? I mean,
yeah, exactly.
Like, I mean, really.
Yeah, I'm not going to pay taxes like a dumbass.
What's wrong with you, kid? I mean, but seriously, it's just like, are you serious? I mean, to me, wealth back in the day when it was reality show was, I mean, Paris Hilton, that was the precedent of showing us, I'm a Hilton, my name means something, and I'm doing a reality show. To me, that was like, whoa. This rich little girl is doing a reality show, but then she turned it into like this big bank. And I was like, okay, I see where this is going. But then when you got like people who out of nowhere, then I was like, oh, now it's kind of not, you know what I mean? It's like, okay, I get it. Like, I was really interested in seeing like how she, I was like, wow, like she's like, for me, I was like, is she slumming it? Like, I was like, why is she going to Walmart? Cause it made for good TV. You know, it really did. It was, we poked fun at her. It was like Walmart girl, you know, it's like shopping and, you know, we poked fun at her, but you know, there was something to be said about it. But now it's just like, oh no, I'm watching about Billy's school session, and oh my God, I can't believe this girl wants to do a cat fight with me because blah. And I'm just like, oh, this is so high school. Oh.
Well, let me ask you this then. With everything we had just talked about, what if Orange is the New Black called you and said, we want you for a new character? Would you do it?
That's almost like saying, is the sky blue? Yes. What I do is I push my agents a lot to, I could give them a list of things that I would like, or that I know that I probably can book or audition well for. So, and as an African American, like a female actress, so I'm like the triple AAAAA, I look at shows that have a strong cast of black actors. So I'll know, okay, maybe the storyline could be her sister or maybe her long lost daughter or like a cousin, you know what I mean? Or like I can be the best friend, there is something to be said about that. So yeah, I do look at that cast. I'm going, wow, those are some really strong characters. Yes, please sign me up. You know what I mean? Cause then there's something that I can look forward to, not just as a show like Friends, and I was like, yeah, there's no one there I can relate to. Sorry. It's not gonna help me.
So do you think maybe the walls are kind of breaking down between between theater, movie theater, television, and now internet?
I think a little bit. I mean, there are some breaks where you go, wow, okay, this character is really good, and I also think up and coming people like Lupita Nyong'o, like, I mean, she came out of nowhere, literally from, Yale or Juilliard, and like, hello, she's an Oscar now? It's like, really? All because of one performance. So and she was on the performance stage, and that's where they saw her, on the stages where she was in school. There's another young lady, another African-American girl that's in the brand new Star Wars, which I mentioned before. She's an American from New Jersey, of all places. Went to Scotland to study at the conservatory in Scotland. Star Wars was like, oh, we're holding the casting, but oh, let me just check into the Scottish theater. Saw her and was like, all right, so you're now in Star Wars now. Oh my God, she's like the new Star Wars girl. And I'm just like, seriously? So now I feel like, okay, now where can I go? I'm like, Sweden has like zero black people. Well, yeah, they do. I'm just being, facetious, but I'm like, can someone please put me in Star Wars, because they see her, but that's how I feel sometimes, because I mean, there's a lot of competition. There's a lot of things, even though there's crossovers, but I mean, come on. Like, she was in New Jersey, she's in school, and then she's like, oh, well, let me go to Scotland, which I'm pretty sure is not that very many. And then they saw her, and they're like, all right, yeah, you want to be in Star Wars? Yes. You know what I mean? So it's almost as if, like, you have to either persevere and go for what you can see yourself in, or go outside the box and then have them come find you. And you're like, because then they'll be like, oh, yeah, she's from New Jersey, but we discovered her in Scotland. It makes for a better, I guess, marketing, I guess, news story, because, yeah, I mean.
Well, do you find it hard for most actors and actresses to cross over? Because, like, I always think of, like, the ones that actually can and get away with it. Like the first one on my mind is always Morgan Freeman. The guy, right. The guy's all over television. The guy's all over radio. The guy's all over the internet. And the guy can be in any movie he wants. Yep. and he's played God.
I know.
Twice.
He's played God and a president. Like, you can't get higher than that. Like,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. I mean, like the guy can do whatever he wants. Do you think that's possible anymore for an actor or an actress to achieve that?
Yeah, I think at that point where you command your roles or turn down roles, I think at that point you can do whatever you want. I mean, he's done stage. He's done, movies, TV. He can do anything. He's Visa commercial, voices. It's like, he just has to literally call up and say, hey, so I want to do a Tide commercial. Okay. It's like, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Samuel L. Jackson's another actor. that can do that. I mean, speaking of, you know, speaking of Visa commercial, well, he does his, I think he does Chase.
He does the what is it? The what's in your wallet one? What's that one?
American Express?
No. It's the one that Alec Baldwin did, the what's in your wallet with the Viking kids, or it is a Visa one, but it's name
Chase.
Of the
card. I think it is Chase.
Something like that. Yeah. But the difference is about him, though, and I love Samuel to death. I mean, he goes to my church, so it's all good. When you see him, though, you always think of Snakes on the Plane. Like,
yeah.
I can't be Visa card on this. And you're like, Morgan Freeman, you hear distinction. You hear distinguished. You're like, Visa, it's where you want to go. Samuel Jackson, you go, oh, Samuel, you're about to curse any minute now.
Like, blow off. Like, my worst nightmare is having Morgan Freeman judge me, and then he sends Samuel L. Jackson out to kill me.
That's the worst nightmare ever. You win hands down.
So, well, let's talk about the show for a little bit. What are you and Peter planning to do with all these artists?
Well, that's a good question. Well, right now we're at the stage where we're still receiving a lot of artists from around the world. We just received some from Australia, from London, and Italy, of course, a lot from America, that really heard about the project, that really wants to showcase their talent. So right now we're on the verge of like contacting them, letting them know, we want to do some interviews with you, talk about your process, talk about your quote unquote, your road to destiny, because we feel like, we feel very compassionate about that. I mean, if you have a passion for your art, you can speak about it nonstop, or you can speak about your process, but you're not known. To us, those are the people that we love, because that's somebody that says, you know what, I may not be, famous or, whatever. I may not be, whoever, but you know what? I have the gear. I've got this project. I've got sound. I have a tune, whatever. And I just want to share it with the world. And those are the people that we're looking for. Those unknowns that want to showcase their work and put them on this really cool album. Because how cool is it to have some guy from Croatia? Like, really, when you think of music, you don't think of Croatia. You're like, really? Right. See? No. Right. But they're okay. Heavy metal in Croatia versus a pop singer in Jamaica versus. There's just so many aspects and elements that we feel like, everyone has that spark, but those who truly have a passion for it, those are the ones that we really want on the project. Those are the ones that we really want on the album, so people can hear it, and then they'll get recognized. Like, oh well, yeah, there's that kid. Like, wow. And then you say to yourself, really, Croatia? I didn't even know that. Wow, let me look into that. You see what I'm saying? So it helps them. It helps them.
Well, you know what I find totally awesome about this. Are like, these are people that are going to be recording songs together that have never met and will actually, in all honesty, probably never meet, in person. And they're all going to be collaborating on an album, on this, not only on the same album, but the same songs.
Mm-hmm.
And that just blows my mind.
This is one of the biggest collaborative efforts that I know of. I mean, it's almost like, like a World AIDS Day or, like where everybody comes together and, we're all doing a song. But this one, except for the only difference is that we're not well known. You know what I mean? It's like these are people who are photographers or someone who is a lyricist or someone who does this. I mean, I have so many friends who are like, who asked me, because I am in California, hey, do you know anyone in the music business? And sadly, it's just, you do, but you don't know the right person to send them to. You know what I mean? It's like, I may know somebody, but that doesn't necessarily mean that I can grab your stuff and they'll give it to Clive Davis. And then, you're, you know what I mean? So, and it's heartbreaking because I'm just like, gosh, what do I do? So I think with this project, this is at least a jumping off point for them to at least get some type of global recognition. So maybe Clive Davis is listening. Maybe someone can help them or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I'm in the same boat with Jammer Direct because I know a lot of people people at record labels because they send me stuff and say, you know, send me things like, can you help us, you know, promote this artist and all this stuff? And, you know, but then I get a lot of our members saying like, you know, well, can you help us get with these record labels and stuff? And it's like, yeah, I know a lot of them, but I mean, I don't know if I know the right people in them that could do that. You know, because I know the people that are sending the stuff out. I don't know the people that are accepting the stuff in.
Exactly. Like, I have some friends at EMI, and I still have some friends over at Disney over there, or also Warner Brothers Records. And it's just like, hey, you know, I see them because they're my friends, or you know, you socialize with them, and you find out later, like, oh yeah, what do you do? Oh, you know, because that comes up in conversation. But you don't ever want to. It's a thin line, but seems like, oh hey, by the way, I have a cousin that, you know. But then again, it's like, you never know until you take that chance, because maybe they'll say, yeah, actually, I know someone that can help out. Or, you know, so it's a thin line to.
Yeah. Yeah. And exactly. And a lot of times I'm in that position where they're more worried about whether I'm going to promote the artist they send me than if they get, because they probably get tens of thousands of stuff on their own.
Exactly. It was the same thing with acting. I mean, it is who you know. I mean, it literally is 50% your face, 20% who you know, 20% location, because location is everything. Like, where were you? Like, were you at this party? Did you meet this person here? And 10% talent. I mean, it really is like that percentage, because that's the 10% you give to your managers and your agents anyway. But you are the 90%. Like, you have to do all the work. And getting back to your first question, I mean, it really is, you're doing all the work. I mean, you have to find auditions or encourage your agents or even send them some stuff. They'll do the work for you, and that's perfect. I love my agents to death. But if I don't start doing things or other projects on my own, like if I just sit here all day in LA, like twiddling my thumbs, I'm not going to do things. So I do other projects. I have my own production company called Verse Films. And Peter and I we're working on one horror short film coming up in October. And then we have already worked on, when he was here in LA, a drama thriller. And we actually got considered for NBC Universal Short Film Festival. We shot that in one day. I literally was like, hey, so I wrote a script, like, now let's go film it. He's like, all right. We filmed it, we shot it, and then we edited it. I mean, he went back to Italy, and we both, you know, we did like a Skype call each week, you know, like, this is what I want, this is what I need, this is what he wanted, this is what he did. He made the whole, I mean, he scored the entire project. I told him, I literally, at that point, I got the email, like, hey, we're looking for a new artist, new this, da, 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 da. And then all of a sudden, it was like, submitted in by this date. We submitted it, done. We were thinking, okay, if it's us against 10,000 other submissions, then next thing you know, like 3 weeks later, we got, you're now being considered for the short film festival. We were like, seriously? Are you kidding me? NBC Universal just said we're being considered. So we're like, okay. And then, you know, so now we're on IMDb. That Peter loves it, because that's his first IMDb credit. You know, he's like, what is IMDb? And then when I showed him the world of IMDb, he goes, oh, I like it. So now he tells all his friends in Italy, look, I am famous because I'm on IMDb now. And I'm like, oh,
nice. Nice.
But those are the things that you have to start thinking for yourself. So it's like, you start doing your own projects. So speaking about, you know, do you want to do this? It's like, yeah, I would love to be in those shows like that. But I also want to do my own stuff and start there, because then I feel like, well, I'm going to get recognized and notice of my hard work, and that's going to really pay off. I truly think it is. And with ADP, I think that's going to help people start going, oh, well, what is she about? Or what is Peter about? Like, oh yeah, let me listen to some of his tracks. Let me listen to his songs. You know, so it starts to blow up, and it's really good for both of us, because then people go, oh yeah, we love talking about this artist from Portugal, because, you know, whatever. So their listeners, their followers will now follow us, will now look to what we're doing. And if we have a horror film, like in Scream Fest or some short film fest or whatever, they're going to watch it, right? And then people around the world is going to be like, oh yeah, do you know about the horror film? Blah, blah, blah. It's gonna spread like wildfire. It's gonna be viral. So I think it's a really good thing. And of course, we promote it's like promoting everybody. It literally is like, it literally is a big collaborative effort, and I like that. I like stuff like that. So it's good.
And you know what I love about it is the organicness of it. This is, I can't even guess what it's going to sound like.
I know. I'm not scared, but I'm excited because I just want to know, wow, this culture is bringing so much funk. This culture is bringing so much bass. This culture is bringing like the metal sound. This culture is all about interpretation, or this culture is about the lyrics. I'm thinking, how are we going to infuse this into an album?
I have no clue. I have no clue. You know, I don't think it's going to sound bad, though. I really don't. No, you know,
it's not.
Yeah, exactly. Because you know, like I said, you and Pete are gonna have the reins on it the whole time. And
yeah,
you know, number two, I mean, there's going to be guidelines on it anyway. And I think, you know, when you get people on a collaborative effort like that, true collaborators will think about the project first and about what they're working on first. And so you're going to have everybody's best intentions right out of the bat.
Exactly. I think that's what we're trying to weed out is who's the me versus, oh, cool. Can I borrow that sound from this person? Or, yeah, I think I can write a song to that sound. Or, yeah, I think I can show a visual with that sound. You know, like, yeah, I mean, seriously, that is what we're looking for. Those people who not only want to promote themselves, but also promote the project as a whole, because that's the only way how it's going to blow up. You know, that's the only way that's going to succeed. So
You know what I would love to see? I would love to see like, you know, stuff clear out of left field, like a string quartet join up. Ooh. Or, you know, or a jazz trio.
Nice, you know, a little bluegrass.
Yeah. You know, I mean, like, you know, like people just that are just so far out of left field that you'd never guess they would have signed up, and then they put their own mark on it. Because I mean, that would just make it so interesting.
Very interesting. It's similar to like, I don't know if you heard about this Japanese band called Baby Metal. Have you heard of these kids?
Yeah. Actually, I have.
These little Japanese girls, you look at them, they're like, oh, look how cute, an emoji.
Yeah.
Look, they're so cute.
And then they're death metal. It's like wow.
I mean, they are hardcore. Like, I truly think that Ozzy Osbourne spewed them out. Like, I was like, what is going on, deaf kids?
And then that guitar player, she's what, like 8 or something like that? Or like 7? And like, I saw a video on YouTube where she's like playing Steve Vai.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the hell? You know?
You're like, really?
Yeah, and the guitar's bigger than she is.
I know, it's so cute. So yeah, that's what we're hoping for, is like people that you don't think would match or would go together, because it's like, really? Seriously? But then when you listen to it, it's like, okay, bluegrass, string quartet added in with like some like this or that. I mean, yeah. I mean, that's going to be like, okay. Like, I mean, even now everything is dubsteppable. I call it dubsteppable because the theme to like Tubular Bells, I heard a dubstep of Tubular Bells. I was like, okay, now you guys have gone too far. But it just shows you how people are thinking outside the box to slow it down, give it some more bass and this. And then Harry Potter's theme song was on dubstep, and like the Saw theme song was on dubstep. And I was like, okay, so now these are all soundtracks on dubstep. And I was like, I would have never, because they're so classic. They're so things that you know. Like, if you hear Tubular Bells, you know something scary is coming up. You know what I mean? It's just like, Omen, you know, whatever. Or, you know, Exorcist. It's just like, if you hear Saw theme song, you automatically think there's going to be some person on a tricycle coming around the bend about to cut you up, like, you know, asking you to play a game. But then, like, when you add in another track or a sample of something else as an element, then you're like, oh, this is nice.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, because like I'm thinking, like, what if we had like Gregorian chanters, you know, do the rhythm, and then like a barbershop quartet do the lead over it.
Nice.
You know, I mean, just something quirky like that. But theoretically, it could all work, you know?
It can all work. I mean, I love music. I am a proponent of music. I used to DJ back in college. Like, I still sort of kind of on the side, like in my house, like in my house, in my room, in the shower. No, I'm just kidding.
Make got like thousands of mixed CDs that you made up and stuff. Exactly. Yeah.
And it's one of those things where it's just like music truly is the universal language. And I'm sorry, kids, like you may not like country, but there are some elements of country that really can be used in sort of things. If you know, and I'm not a strong person of country, but I know who Clint Black is. You know, I know who, you know, Shania Twain is. I know who, you know, these other people are. But they still have an element of pop to them. And not all pop stars have pop. They got a little bit of rap. I mean, look at Korn. Korn, oh my God, when you hear Korn, you hear the elements, but then you hear like this little break beat and you're like, what? What's going on? Exactly. The same thing with Linkin Park. I just finished watching them in San Diego when I was down at Comic-Con. I mean, think about it. Mr. Han, he's like the whole, like with the scratching and everything with this band. And you're like, how does this fit in? But then you hear it and you're like, this is dope. This is one of the best sounds. I mean, I love Linkin Park. And because of that, they add in that element of, you know, true rock and roll, you know, and stuff. But then they have like some, but he has voice. Chester's voice is just so like, so melodic. Like he can do those high pitches. He can also, you know, become all ballad, you know, like, oh, I'm a ballad, every rose has a name, you know, versus like I can scream at you and then like you have like the break beat and you're like, oh, this is nice.
And he can also quasi improve Stone Temple Pilots
too. Yeah. Poor Chester. He's caught in a rock and a hard place where he's like, hey, do you want to be the frontman of STP? He's like, yeah.
But he nailed it though. I think he's doing great with it, you know.
I love them to death. Like I've been a Linkin Park fan forever, so yeah, he's all over. But that's what I'm saying, that those elements where you're just like, wow, I didn't think that can go with that. And I mean, because when you hear a rock band go into a ballad, you're thinking, oh, this is the softer side of Sears. where you're like, okay, you know, it's the softer side of this, you know, like, okay, they're getting in touch with the soft side. And then you roll your eyes like, oh, this is the ballad, you know, because they're known for being hardcore metal. But then you hear them all like, oh, being soft. You're just like, oh, well, it works. You know, you're like, it works.
Exactly. So what do you have coming up next besides the show? What are you doing?
So besides the show, like I said, Redshirt Diaries, which is going to be also launching September 1st, redshirtdiaries.com. Thank you very much. My own production company, Verse Films, we're doing a horror short called Watch Me. It is good horror. It's not like, there's a monster in my bed. It's psychological horror where this could really happen. Like a paranormal type deal where you like, yeah, I hear sounds in my house, but that's just the wind, or, oh, that's just the floorboards, or blah, 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 blah. No, like, so my horror, short film, that I'm writing and directing is similar to that, where it's one of those elements where it's like, I think that's the biggest fear, when you think this really can happen. Like, stalkers are real. Like, seriously. Like, someone can stalk you, that's for real. Not like Freddy Krueger, which I love Freddy Krueger, don't get me wrong, but I'm sorry, but someone chasing me in my, you know, it's not as real as an actual real person, a real murderer, a real thing.
Because you don't know what they're going to do.
Right. So. Right. Someone who drowns in a lake. Okay, that's real, and I'm sorry if any of our listeners have anyone, loved ones who have, forgive me, but I'm saying that's real to the point where you think the fear of going to the lake now is traumatizing to you, because now you think you're reliving the story, you're rehashing that flashback, and it's so real and paralyzing to you. You know what I mean? You start to see elements of your world being distorted, you know, because you can't get a grip on reality. Like, so that's how my horror film is. It's like, this is borders the real, you know. So and it will shock you, because, not to give it away, but, you know, it starts off with like all June Cleaver in the beginning, all like, oh, hello Beaver, hello, you know, and then all of a sudden you're like, what? Like, really? And then you think, and then you go, oh, that really could happen, you know? So that's what I'm working on. I also just finished auditioning for some national commercials and some other elements and some movies that are also coming out my way that I can't say what they are, but I have been working on a couple of movies as well outside of my own production companies. So I'm pretty good. I'm good.
Man, you're doing a lot, man.
You have to in this game. I mean, again, and one other thing I want to say is, as an actor starting out, I believe that everyone can do it. It's like getting your first job. Like, who's going to hire you if you don't have the resume? Yeah, but keep trying. Like, somebody will. You will get that first gig. And once you do, build upon that. Make sure that you don't burn those bridges, because in Hollywood, you never know who knows who and what and whatever. But my biggest advice to listeners or to anybody is, like, yeah, just, I mean, it's an old cliche, but just try. I mean, what's better, that you tried or you didn't try?